We'll call the House Senate Tax Conference Committee to order. What we will do today is we will have a side-by-side comparison from House staff, Senate staff, regarding the language in the bill. Then we'll have a side-by-side of the spreadsheet. After each article, we will have questions from members. We'll break it down that way. We're very fortunate this evening to have with us Commissioner Franz and Susan Von Mosch from the department. We're glad you're at the table here this evening. And there's really good news tonight, just very good news, better than the budget forecast numbers. I don't know if you saw the front page of the St. Paul Pioneer Press today, but Rascal Flatts is coming to the state fair. So exciting. Okay, with that, Senator Ortman, if you'd like to make a few opening remarks, and then we'll start with the side-by-sides.
Okay. I'm going to defer to the chair.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. So we'll get right into the bill. We have language over there, and there should be some spreadsheets on the numbers. So if we could have, we'll go article by article. Article 1, property taxes from the House. I think we probably need Mr. Hines, Ms. Manzi, and I believe Ms. Dalton. We don't need Ms. Manzi. Mr. Hines. Mr. Hines. And then from the Senate, we should have at the front table Mr. Sylvia. Mr. McQuay. Ms. McQuay. Okay, and Mr. Paul. I believe that's it. And if I have it wrong on who we need at the front table, just let me know. So, members, you should have had in your packets, you should have the bill comparison summary of House File 2331, Third Engrossment. 2337. Mr. Hines, would you like to start us out here?
Senate, since the first three sections.
Okay, very good. Mr. Sylvia?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Section 1 of the Senate bill modifies the requirements for the monetary benefit found in the Performance Standard Measures Program, and what it does is require that in 2012 only, a city or county with a population of 2,500 or greater must also participate in the expenditure type reporting found in the later section to qualify for the monetary benefit of 14 cents or more with a cap at 25,000. Section 2 eliminates the levy cap on the career and technical levy and eliminates the proration language, which would allow the levy to rise to the statutory formula level. Section 3 extends by 11 years the authority for the school districts that are members of the Technology and Information Education Systems Joint Board to levy under the building lease levy for improvements, and also authorizes the school districts that are members of the St. Croix River Education District to enter into a lease purchase agreement for building and land and use that levy to pay cost of the agreement, and that is an authority granted for 15 years.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, House Section 1 is a extension or maybe a renewal of the bovine tuberculosis credit, which had expired due to the Board of Animal Health, due to certification of being a bovine TB-free zone. But in light of some realization that there had been some strict restrictions still on some property owners in that bovine TB area, the House bill extends the program to a much smaller subset of the original recipient group for until those restrictions are lifted completely on what the farmers can do up there.
Mr. Hines, Section 2.
Section 2 on the House side is some changes in the state general levy. Basically, the House proposal involves three changes that go on for 2012. There is a freeze of the inflator from that would normally have taken place in 2013, so it's frozen at the 2012 level. Then there's a reduction of about $55 million on top of that to offset the shift in Section 3, the exclusion in Section 3. And then it provides for a 12-year phase-out of the state general levy beginning with payable 2014. And
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, on the Senate side, the levy is set at a particular amount from 2013 to 2016. It's set at $742 million for commercial industrial property and at $41.2 million for seasonal or residential recreational property. And beginning with taxes payable in 2017, both levies are reduced by a little over 11% until the tax is eliminated for taxes payable in 2026.
Mr. Hines, Section 3.
Then, Mr. Chair, our section, House Section 3, provides that the first $150,000 of each commercial industrial property is 70% of that amount is exempted from the state general levy for payable 2012 and, or 2013 and thereafter. And, Section 4, which is basically the same as Senate Section 5, is just some sort of technical language that deals with the fact that the phase-out is being a different section of the statutes now.
Mr. Sylvia, Section 6, Senate side.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 6 relates to the expenditure type reporting, and what Section 6 does is require that counties and cities with a population of more than 2,500 provide to the county auditor the municipal website, if one is available, where the public may access budget information. It requires that the budget notice also include a statement that budget information is available on the municipal website. Section 7 also requires that the truth and taxation notice clearly state that budgetary information is available on the municipal website.
Mr. Hines?
Section 5 and 6 are a change in the interest rate that is charged on delinquent property taxes, changing it to the prime rate plus 2%. Under current law, it is also tied to the prime rate, but there's a floor of 10% and a maximum of 14%, which really dictates it in the current low interest rate environment. So this would reduce the tax on delinquent property tax, or the interest on
later.
Section 7, I refer to Ms. Manzi.
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair and members, Sections 7 through 12 and 27 relate to the renter property tax refund. The proposal in the House is very similar to what was included in the Conference Committee report on House File 42 last year. There are three basic substantive changes. The first is to reduce the percent of rent constituting property taxes from 17% to 15%. The second is to provide separate schedules for senior and disabled renters and non-senior and non-disabled renters. The text in Section 9 describes the schedule for the senior and disabled renters. That would remain very similar to what's in current law. The maximum household income eligible for a refund for senior and disabled claimants would fall from about $54,600 to $40,000, and the maximum refund would remain the same as in current law at $1,550. For non-senior, non-disabled renters, the new schedule is described in Section 10, and there the maximum income eligible would decrease from the current law $54,620 to $25,000, and the maximum refund would decrease to $1,000. The third substantive change is that the inflation adjustment of the income brackets for the property tax refund and of the maximum refund would be eliminated for the renter property tax refund, although it would remain in effect for the homeowners. The other sections make technical changes to conform to those three changes. And then the final section, Section 27, directs the commissioner to recalculate claims for the refunds that were based on rent paid in 2011. Since this proposal would be effective for refund claims that people will be filing from, like, February of this year through August of this year based on the rent that they paid last year. So the commissioner would need to recalculate the claims that have already been filed and then notify the claimants who received a reduced refund that it was due to a law change.
Mr. Chair, Section 8 modifies
Sylvia.
Targeting property tax refund in the Senate increased the percentage from 60% to 70%, and that begins with refunds based on taxes payable in 2012 and thereafter.
Mr. Hines?
And, Mr. Chair, I think the next change then would be on sections 13 and 14 on the House side. The House eliminated interest in the senior deferral program. So beginning July 1st of 2013, there would no longer be interest charged to taxes deferred under the senior deferral program. Then tapped sections 15 through 19 are changes in the taxes. Sections 15 and 16 relate to the tax on non-ferrous metals, and Section 15 reduces the occupation tax by 1%, and then Section 16 increases the net proceeds tax from 2 to 3%. So the a 1% change is made by dropping the occupation tax and increasing the net proceeds tax. Section 17 relates to the distribution of the non-ferrous metals taxes, and it changes the distribution somewhat to greater take into account the city or town where the concentrating takes place. Section 18 then deals with the taconite production tax, and this is a reallocation of that money to, again, put a greater emphasis on the greater distribution to the places where the taconite production actually takes place, or where the location of the mines are. Section 19 changes the distribution of the school district taconite credit. This is the distribution by 3 cents per ton. That's the most of it. Changes somewhat the distribution of the North Shore mining proceeds among the different school districts.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 9 deals with the expenditure type reporting. And what this requires that a municipality published on its municipal website 3 years of previous and 1 year of current budgetary information on both revenues and expenditures. The information would then be organized by function and by expenditure type and must be published by July 31st. The final adopted budget must also be published on the website within 14 days of its final adoption. This section also provides alternative publication provisions for municipalities without a website, including publication in a county newspaper. Section 5 provides an incentive, which is tied back to Section 1 of this article, and it provides an incentive for voluntary participation in this program for 2012 only. It would then be required for 2013 and thereafter. And Subdivision 6 clarifies that failing to comply with this provision, the expenditure type reporting in years 2013 and thereafter, will result in the withholding of state aid, road funding, local police and firefighters, relief association aid, local government aid, and county program aid.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 20 of the House bill provides an extra $12,000 in 2012 only. I'm sorry, there is a no, in 2013 for the city of Tamarack to deal with some unusual sewer costs that they have. Section 21 deals with the starting point for calculated maximum aid increases and decreases in 2013 and 2014. That will use 2012 LGA. Beginning in 2015, you will start using, again, the previous year's aid for calculating minimum and maximum increases.
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Sylvia,
Section 10 begins in pay 2013. The previous year's aid payment would be used in calculating the minimum and maximum aid of the local government aid statute.
Section 22 essentially freezes the 2013 aid for cities with a population over 5,000 at their 2012 amounts. For cities with a population under 5,000. Their 2013 aid amount will be either what they would get under current law or their 2012 payment, whichever is greater. And then it also allows the for the adjustment for the city of Tamarack to receive its extra $12,000.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 10 of the Senate bill freezes a city's 2013 local government aid distribution at the amount equal to their 2012 distribution, and this applies for all cities. There's not a population requirement. Section 11 updates the appropriation of local government aid to reflect the 2013 freeze.
Ms. Dalton? Or Mr. Hines?
Section 23 on the House side is a change in the some of the limitations on the Cook or Hospital District levy. It allows them to use the levy for purchase some additional equipment and requires that the distribution be split between the Cook Area District and the Orr District. Section 24 is a provision that allows farmers in Marshall County who had to move off their land because of flooding in 2009 to continue to receive Ag Homestead on that land, even though they no longer live there, provided they're within 50 miles. This provision was passed in 2010, but was put in on a two-year basis, so this would allow it to continue indefinitely.
Ms. Dalton?
Section 25 provides for an additional payment in 2012 of $12,000 to the city of Tamarack. It is funded through a general appropriation since the 2012 LGA payments had already been certified.
Mr. Hines?
Section 26 is a supplemental targeting refund for taxes payable in 2012 only. It basically increases the percentage paid by the state from 60% to 90%. This would affect forms that have already been out there. It also instructs the Department of Revenue to recompute the claims, or to recompute the refunds based on the new parameters.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, if I may just go back to the House Section 23. There was an error in the side-by-side, and the Senate does have a similar provision. It is found in the Senate's technical policy bill. This relates to the Cook or Hospital District. The only change is that the Senate does not require that the portion of this levy be split evenly between the Cook or Hospital districts.
Thank you.
Section 14, Mr. Chair and members, requires that the Commissioner of Revenue recalculate the targeting property tax refund using 75% of the increase exceeding 12% of income instead of the 60% that is current law, and this reflects a change found in Section 8 of the Senate bill.
Mr. Hines?
And Section 27 is just the technical section relating to the fact that the Commissioner needs to recompute the renter credit amounts in 2012 because the schedule's been changed that said in her earlier notes. Section 28 on the outside is a provision that that temporarily allows cities or cities of political subdivisions to hold property for economic development purposes from 9 years to 11 years for cities located in the metropolitan area or cities greater than 5,000 outside the metropolitan area. This change is in effect through December 31st of 2015. So it expands that. It allows them to hold it for two additional years for the next.
Mr. Chair, if I may also correct, there is a similar provision in the Senate's technical policy bill. And what this does is extend by 1 year. It extends a holding period from 9 to 10 years for property located in the metropolitan area or a city 5,000 or more outside the metro area. So it simply extends it by 1 year.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Hines?
Section 29 establishes a truth and taxation task force to study and make recommendations on the design and content of truth and taxation statements. And it's the task force to make a report by December 15th of 2012. Section 13 is in some ways an extension of an existing program for border cities that had heavy provide a property tax exemption for newly constructed homes and other residential properties. The current law, that program had been in effect for homes built through, I think, December 31st of 2011, and that was a state paid for the exemption or the exclusion. And under this program, there would be no state payment. It would allow a city to opt in, and it's just limited to cities affected by its flooding to opt into this program. And we also have the same option for new construction or for improvements to existing properties for a 2-year exclusion or exemption.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 12 relates to the career and technical levy, which we addressed in Section 2. Section 2 eliminated the levy cap, and what this section does is maintain the levy cap for taxes payable in 2012 only, so that the certified levies do not then need to be recalculated. And Section 13, Mr. Chair and members, relates to the lease levy and administrative space. And what this subdivision does is allow the Faribault and Wayzata school districts to use their lease levy authority to pay for the lease of administrative space rather than instructional space, provided that the lease for the administrative space is less expensive than the leasing instruction space. Section 15 also repeals the state general levy for taxes payable in 2026 and thereafter.
Thank you. We'll now open up for questions from members. And I apologize to Commissioner Franz. I should have given you some time for some opening remarks, but I didn't. So what we'll do, members, is we will open up for members some questions and the commissioner for the staff we have here from the House and the Senate. So Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You could cite the section.
I'd like to bring us back to the House Section 5, Article 1, or Article 1, Section 5. This is in regards to the rate on delinquent property taxes. Question I have is, what would be the rate today if we added 2% onto a prime rate?
Mr. Hines, what's the prime today? I know what the markets did today. I'm not sure what the prime did today. Mr. Michael?
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's either 2 or 3%, so I'm not sure. It's the same rate that is paid on unpaid taxes to DOR. So it probably it would either be 4% or 5%. I'm just not sure which.
Senator Limmer?
As compared to 10 under the current
Well, that's
law.
That's the point. We're setting the rate at a prime rate plus 2%, but under current law, the rate is set to the prime rate subject to a minimum of 10% to 14%. So what's going to be the rate that's charged if this becomes law?
Is it
somewhere between 10 and 14, or is it somewhere more 2% over prime?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer. It would be 2 percentage points above the prime rate, which I do not know what that would be now, but it's either 4 or 5%. So it would be a significant drop from the 10% minimum, likely down to 4, I think, but I'm not sure. It may be 5.
All right,
Senator Limmer?
I just wanted to clarify the rate. I was hoping we weren't claiming the rate is 2% over prime, but we're going to charge 10 to 14%. I just want to make sure of that.
Yes, Senator, and that was a provision that I had worked on, and basically the 10 to 14 seemed very, very high, and so that would be eliminated, and it would be 2% above prime.
All right. Thank you.
Questions on any sections in Article 1? Commissioner? Any? Well, okay, so now let's go to Article 2, and I would like to call up Ms. Pollack from the Senate. And Ms. Manzi and Mr. Michael. And thank you, Mr. Sylvia, and everyone who helped out with Article 1. So we will now go to House Article 2, and members, that'd be on page 8
14th cup of coffee.
Of the side-by-sides.
Just move. Oh, he's over there.
And we'll start off with Section 1, Article 2, with the House. Ms. Manzi, is that yours?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Article 2, Section 1 provides a new definition. This is the definition subdivision for the Angel Investment Credit, and it provides a new definition of the term liquidation event, which is used later on in the House proposed changes to the Angel Investment Credit.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, the Senate Section 1 is different, and it contains a definition of a qualified Greater Minnesota business as a qualified small business certified by deed under the criteria that is in our next Section 2.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Section 2 of the Angel Credit makes changes to the requirements that a small business has to satisfy in order to qualify for investments that will then be eligible for the credit. The first change is to increase the number of years that a business is allowed to have been in operation from 10 years to 20 years, but only in the case of businesses that are engaged in researching or producing drugs that require approval by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The second change is to prohibit the business from having its securities trade on a public exchange prior to the investment being made and within 180 days of the date the investment is made. And the third change is to prohibit the business from having a liquidation event or going out of business within 180 days of the date that the investment that qualifies for the credit is made.
Ms. Pollack.
The Senate Section 2 also applies to Greater Minnesota businesses, and it authorizes businesses to apply to deed for certification as a qualified Greater Minnesota business. And it provides that definition as the area of the state outside the seven-county metro area, including the cities of Hanover, New Prague, Northfield, and Rockford. And those cities are partly in the seven-county metro area and partly in other counties. And to qualify as a Greater Minnesota business, it must have its headquarters and at least 51% of its employees and payroll in the Greater Minnesota area.
Ms. Manzi.
Section 3 of the House increases the annual cap on Angel Credit allocations by $5 million from $12 million to $17 million for tax years 2012 through 14. The program would still be sunset after 2014.
Ms. Pollack.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the Senate provision increases the cap to $14 million from $12 million. And it also retains this present sunset of after 2014. Sure. And the next provision in the Senate Section 3, Mr. Chair, increases the credit rate for investments in qualified Greater Minnesota businesses to 40% from 25%.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, the House and the Senate both have provisions intended to increase the level of investments in Greater Minnesota businesses. They just go about it in a little bit different way. As Ms. Pollack just explained, the Senate proposes increasing the credit rate for investments in qualified Greater Minnesota businesses from 25 to 40%. Section 4 of the House first requires the Commissioner of Deed to develop a plan to promote greater usage of the credit in Greater Minnesota, with the objective of awarding at least 30% of credits to investments in Greater Minnesota beginning in the second half of calendar year 2013 and in following years. If in any of those years they fail to meet the objective of having 30% of investments go to Greater Minnesota businesses, then the credit rate increases to the same 40% as in the Senate bill for investments in the next year in qualified Greater Minnesota businesses. Both bills have the same definition of qualified Greater Minnesota businesses. It's just included in different places in the bill.
Ms. Pollack, Section 4 of the Senate.
Mr. Chair, Section 4 provides language to add the qualified Greater Minnesota businesses to the provision requiring those businesses to repay credits awarded if they fail to meet the employment and payroll requirements in the 5 years following the year that the investment was made.
Thank you. Ms. Manzi, Section 5.
Section 5 of the House allows more information to be disclosed about businesses that receive information qualifying for the Angel Investment Credit. Under present law, only the name of the business may be disclosed, and this would also allow the mailing address, a contact person's name, and so on to be disclosed to the public.
Okay, Section 6 of the Senate, Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Section 5 of the Senate provision is the same
Okay.
Ms. Manzi just mentioned.
Thank you.
In Section 6 of the Senate bill, there's language added to require reporting on the number of minority or women-owned businesses in the deed report on the Greater Minnesota businesses to the legislature. I'm sorry, to the deed report on the Angel Investment Program to the legislature.
Thank you. Ms. Manzi? Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 6 of the House bill establishes a new tax program that allows emerging biotechnology companies, which are defined as companies that have 250 or fewer full-time employees in the year and have attracted at least $2.5 million of private investment. It allows those companies to sell to 15 million of their of their net operating losses to other corporations that are profitable corporations in Minnesota. In return for that, they need to get a payment that's at least equal to 75% of the tax benefit that will go to the purchasing company. Basically, the tax benefit is defined by multiplying the NOL times the selling corporation's Minnesota apportionment formula and then multiplying it by 9.8% tax rate. The purchasing company is then allowed to take it as a tax credit against their Minnesota liability. In addition, later on, there will be a provision that allows the selling company to exclude the amount they realize on the sale from their income so they don't end up paying tax on that. The amount of the tax benefit or the essentially the loss in revenue to the state under the program is capped at annual amounts that are specified in the bill. For fiscal 13, it's $10 million, 15 for 14, and then $30 million for 15, 16, and $60 million in 17 and 18. And the program is sunset after 18. And there's a program evaluation that's to be conducted and provide it to the legislature by January of 2017.
Ms. Pollack, Section 7.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, the Senate does not have a comparable provision on the, that credit. Section 7 just provides an updated reference in the Minnesota statutes to the most recent version of the Internal Revenue Code. And this is for purposes of conforming to a federal law to allow transfers from IRA rollovers for airline bankruptcy-related payments.
Mr. Chair, the House does not have a comparable update to the Internal Revenue Code.
Mr. Chairman, the next thing we'll talk about is there are a series of provisions that would be best to talk about together because they're all linked and they're on the House side and they're in Section 7, 8, 13. I think a couple of – there's another also in the repealer and in Section 15. What in combination these provisions do is to repeal – the current treatment of foreign operating corporations, which allows foreign operating corporations, allows the unitary business that has a foreign operating corporation to claim a deemed dividend deduction for 80% of the income of the foreign operating corporation. So that the House bill repeals that and instead replaces it with a credit, which appears in Section 13. This credit allows the corporation to claim the lesser of the amount of that tax benefit of the value of the 80% deemed dividend. So it's 80% of their income multiplied by the 9.8% rate or the amount of Minnesota property tax that they that the corporation that any member of the unitary group paid on Minnesota property. So in effect what this does is cap the tax benefit from a foreign operating corporation treatment at the lesser of the amount of the current tax benefit or the amount of Minnesota property tax. that the unitary business pays. That all.
Okay, Section 8.
Mr. Chair, Section 8 strikes language referencing the contractor withholding requirement that is repealed in Section 23.
Okay, Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, the House does not include the contractor withholding language in the tax bill. There is a separate bill traveling in the House, House File 2093, which contains the repeal of the contractor withholding, and that bill is in the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, Ms. Pollack, Section 9, please.
Mr. Chair, Section 9 updates, again, the reference in Minnesota statutes to the most recent version of the Internal Revenue Code, and it strikes some obsolete language for purposes of defining Minnesota net income.
Section 10?
Section 10 contains provisions on additions to federal taxable income, and it also adds conforming language to the Minnesota tax law. And this provision pertains to the increased standard deduction that was adopted under federal law in 2010, applying to 2011 and 2012 only. This section would update Minnesota statutes to the increased standard deduction for married filers for 2012 only. Section 11 provides an income tax subtraction of 40% of military pension or other retirement pay. I'm sorry, 46% of military pension or other retirement pay. This is effective beginning in tax year 2013.
Okay, so there's no comparable provisions for Senate Sections 9, 10, 11 in the House. So we'll go to Section 8 of the House side. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, that's the repeal of the
We've talked about that.
The FOC that we covered sections 9 and 10 on the House side both relate back to the transfer of the NOL program. Brings us up to Section 12 of the Senate bill.
Makes sense.
Ms. Pollack.
Section 12 again updates the reference in Minnesota statutes to the most recent Internal Revenue Code.
Thank you. Section 11. Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Section 11 provides an income tax credit for employers who employ one or more qualified veterans. The credit equals 150% of the federal work opportunity credit to the extent that it's claimed for employment of qualified veterans, which at present is the only thing that the work opportunity credit is allowed for. The federal work opportunity credit is going to sunset after this year, but the language for this credit is written so that the Minnesota credit would remain in effect using the parameters of the federal credit, even if the federal credit is not in effect for the current tax year. Under the federal credit, it equals 40% of a fixed amount of wages paid to a qualified veteran that's hired by the employer during the tax year, and the federal law spells out four groups of qualified veterans, and each of those groups has a different dollar amount for the maximum qualified wages that would get the credit. So the size of the credit that you get increases depending on which group of veteran, which group the individual that you hire belongs to. So it goes from sort of the perhaps easiest to hire to the more difficult to hire, and the credit amount increases as the difficulty for the person to find a job increases. And then the summary spells those out, and I can go through them if you'd like.
We'll see if there's any questions on those so we can proceed.
Section 12,
Mr. Michael?
Section 12 of the House bill is the tax credit for NOL. Section 13, which we discussed before, is Section 13 is the FOC property tax credit. And the Senate has no comparables for either of those two.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, Section 13 increases the amount of the monthly credit for current military service in a combat zone from 120 to 240 per month, and this is effective beginning tax year 2013. Section 14 strikes the definition of qualified individual for purposes of repealing the military retirement pay credit, and that's repealed in Section 23. This is effective beginning tax year 23.
And there's no comparable provisions on Section 13 or 14 on the House side. Section 14 on the House side?
Section 14 increases the rate of the research and development credit on the amount of qualified research over $2 million from 2.5% to 4.5%, and that's effective for the current year.
And no comparable provision in the Senate bill. Section 15, Ms. Pollack.
Section 15 provides a reference to definitions of placed in service and qualified rehabilitation expenditures to their meanings in federal law. And this is for purposes of the Qualified Rehabilitation Historic Structure Program. Section 16 replaces the term expenses with expenditures for purposes of the historic structure credit. And it also allows decisions of the State Historic Preservation Office regarding the eligibility for those state credits to be challenged as a contested case under state administrative procedures. And it updates the reference to references to the Commissioner of Revenue in the statute to be consistent with other references. Section 17 adds language to allow credits granted to corporate entities to be passed through to partners, members, shareholders, or owners of a corporate entity, and the new language is according to any executed agreement between these relevant parties. Section 16 extends the sunset date of the state historic rehabilitation credit.
It's Section 18, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I missed that. Section 18. The extension is to fiscal year 2022 from the current 2015. The State Historic Preservation Office is authorized through 2024 to issue credit certificates based on allocation certificates that were issued before 2022. And the requirement to report the economic impact of the historic structure rehabilitation credit is extended through 2025 or the year after all the allocation certificates have been canceled or resulted in credit certificates, whichever is earlier of the two. Section 19 provides a subtraction from alternative minimum taxable income for the subtraction for military retirement pay that was referenced earlier.
Mr. Michael.
Section 15 is actually the substantive provision where the FOC deemed dividend deduction is repealed. Section 16 eliminates the dividend deduction for REIT dividends. This makes Minnesota law match federal law. Section 17 of the House bill is the repeal of the alternative minimum tax exemption for FOCs.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Sections 20 and 21 again provide a reference to, in Minnesota statutes, to the most recent version of the Internal Revenue Code. And this is for references to the property tax refund and the estate tax chapters. Section 22 is the brewer tax credit, and that's referenced in the House Article 5, Section 3, which we may discuss later, or I can discuss now if you'd prefer.
Now it's fine. Yeah, go ahead. Now it's fine. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the changes to the brewer tax credit increase the minimum number of barrels from 100,000 to 250,000 for a brewer to be qualified as a small brewer to be eligible for the credit.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Manzi.
Article 5, Section 3 of the House is the same. This is a case where the Senate placed this provision into one article and the House placed it into a different article.
Okay. Okay, back to wrapping up Article 2. Any questions from members or the department? If not, while we're bringing up for Article 3, Ms. Dalton from the House, Ms. Pollack, you get to stay right there from the Senate. What I'd like to do, I was so excited about Rascal Flatts coming to town that I missed my introductions. What I'd like to do, members, is I'd like to go through and just go around the table with introductions and who we're representing or what district. And then I think it's important that we introduce folks that are sitting behind us all the way across here. So for the roadies and groupies, you kind of know who you need to talk to because we're going to spend a lot of the next 30 days together. That's just the way it is. Ms. Manzi. Special session. They thought we were getting out by tomorrow night. That was so funny. Okay. Ms. Templin.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff.
Kathy Schill, House Fiscal Staff.
Steve Hines, House Research Department.
Ina Manzi, House Research Department.
Representative Mack, representing District 37A, Apple Valley and Burnsville.
Linda Runbeck, District 53A, Northern Suburbs.
Representative Jennifer Loon, representing 42B, Eden Prairie.
Sarah Anderson, representing Plymouth and Medicine Lake.
Bobby Patrick, the 6th Committee Administrator for House Taxes.
Greg Davids, District 31B, Fillmore and Houston Counties.
Good evening, I'm Julianne Ortman from Carver County and part of Scott County.
Beth Cadoon, Committee Administrator for the Senate Tax Committee.
Warren Limmer, I represent Northwest Hennepin County.
Julie Rosen, honored to serve District 24. That's five counties right now, soon to be seven. And I knew Bobby when he was about this big.
I was never that big.
Yeah.
He was still Roger cute. Chamberlain, District 53.
Yeah. Eric Sylvia, Senate Counsel.
Jack Paulson, Senate Counsel and Research.
Shelby McQuay, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Myron Franz, Commissioner of Revenue.
Susan Donmash with the Revenue Department.
Susan just moved a couple seats down.
You're about department people? Oh, yeah.
Back here.
Katie Smith, DFL Research for the House.
Chris Rehnquist, Senate DFL Research.
Well, Peter Fjellsted, Legislative Assistant, Chair Ortman.
Dan Mickelberg, Senate Republican Research.
You got me. Okay, that's everybody. Okay, so let's go to Article 3, please. Excuse me. Oh, I read those now. Mr. Michael, please.
I'm Joel Michael from House Research. That's the question.
Bolton with House Research.
Nora Pollack with Senate Counsel and Research.
Okay. And just remember, folks, this is not a conference committee. This is an adventure. So we will go from there. Senate Article 3. In the House Sales and Use Tax, Article 3, Section 1. In Article 2 in the Senate, the same except one date there. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. This is a section that both House and the Senate has. It eliminates the accelerated remittance schedules for large sales tax vendors with collections of at least $120,000. And it's effective for all payments due after July 1 or due after June 30th. It really isn't going to make any difference which of those dates you pick. These early remittance requirements are currently scheduled to blink off at the time the budget surplus, at this time due to the budget surplus in the February 2012 forecast.
Okay, Section 2, Ms. Pollack.
Section 2 is a sales tax exemption for payments by an entity for lab services to examine and report results for specimens collected outside the state. And these revenues go to the health care provider taxes used to fund the Minnesota Care Program. And it also requires the entity that's claiming the exemption to keep adequate records to demonstrate that the specimen was collected outside the state.
Thank you. Section 3?
Section 3 adds a provision to the definition of retail sale. The definition is for payments on rent-to-own or lease-to-own used vehicles that may be returned at any time without penalty. So the effect is that the sales tax is levied on the payment at each time the payment is due instead of at the full on the full value of the lease at the time of lease initiation. Section 4 provides a sales tax, or Section 4 and 5 pertain to a sales tax exemption for medical devices. This was contained in House File 42 from last year. It's simply a clarification that single-patient use items that are included in the definition of durable medical equipment and that repair and replacement parts include those single-patient use items. And then there's also some clarifying language to determine when a transaction is covered by Medicare or Medicaid. And Section 5 exempts the accessories and supplies required for effective use of durable medical equipment for home use only or when purchased in a transaction covered by Medicare or Medicaid.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Pollack. On the House side, Sections 2 through 5, there's no comparable provisions. Section 2 in the House, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Section 2 in the House, there is a comparable provision on the Senate side, provides that the capital equipment would be an upfront exemption for small businesses, and the House uses the standard definition for small business found in Chapter 645, which is outlined in the summary. All other businesses continue to pay the sales tax on capital equipment and apply for a refund.
Okay, Section 7? Or do you want to talk some more about Senate 6? Okay, Senate 6. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This Section 6 of the Senate provision is a similar capital equipment sales tax provision. The Senate language provides an upfront exemption for businesses that are tied to year 2010 employment records. So beginning in 2013 and going through 2014, if a business had 20 or fewer full-time employees and is not an affiliate or subsidiary of another business dominant in its field, it is eligible for an upfront capital equipment exemption. And in 2015, that employment rate is tied to 50 or fewer full-time employees based on 2010 numbers. And then beginning in 2016, all capital equipment purchases are exempt upfront.
Okay, Section 7 in the Senate. Section 7. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, this is a slight change to the requirements for purchases by qualified data centers. This was the provision adopted last year in the 2011 special session legislation. Changes the requirement to $30 million of purchases within a two-year period. I'm sorry, within a three-year period.
Okay. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, House Sections 3 and 4 relate to an exclusion for St. John's Abbey. St. John's Abbey is in the process of doing a government restructuring, and that government restructuring would make some of their currently non-taxable sales of lodging and food taxable, and this clarifies that they would retain their tax-exempt status.
Because they share the same cafeteria.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
So we're not going to tax the monks when they want to have lunch.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct.
Section 8, Senate. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Section 8 provides a sales tax exemption for nursing home purchases. It's applicable to nonprofit nursing, certified nursing facilities or boarding care homes that are certified as nursing facilities. And the exemption would apply to most purchases by the qualified nursing homes. An outline of what would not qualify for the exemption is contained in the summary. And it's effective for sales and purchases made after June 30, 2012.
Okay.
The House has no comparable provision.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, Sections 9 through 11 remove the references to the refund process for capital equipment purchases, and this becomes effective when the full upfront capital equipment exemption kicks in 2016.
Ms. Dalton.
The House has no comparable provision because the House does not eliminate it.
Section 12 includes the sales tax revenue on rent to own and lease to own used vehicles in the definition of net revenue, and this is for purposes of allocating those proceeds to the transportation funds.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, again, the House has no comparable provision.
Okay. Section 13, Senate, Ms. Pollack.
Section 13 provides a sales tax exemption for purposes of vehicles that are used exclusively as mobile medical units.
Okay, House side, Section 5.
Mr. Chair, the following several sections relate to local sales taxes, and they appear in this bill for the House and the Senate. They appear in their policy and technical bill. Section 5 is adds the city of Wanamingo to the cities that are eligible to receive $5 million of Rochester's local sales tax for economic development purposes. Section 6 increases the lodging tax authority in the city of Rochester from 5% to 7%. Currently, the city is only imposing the tax at a rate of 4%. And this increase is related to bonds for renovations for the Mayo Center complex. And this tax increase would be effective if those bonds are issued, and allows an extra 2 years for those bonds to be issued from 2014 to the end of 2016. It also removes a reference to the food and beverage taxes, which are repealed in a later section of the bill. Section 7 modifies the existing allowed uses of the City of St. Cloud's sales tax to limit funding to regional community and aquatic centers, and it is related to Section 8, which is going to allow an expansion of the Central City's St. Cloud area local sales tax authority from 2018 to 2038, provided the extension is approved by the voters at a general election held by November 2017 in each city, and the vote in each city must still list the projects to be funded with the tax extension, but it exempts the tax from the statutory requirement that the tax expire for 1 year before being reimposed. Section 9 modifies the use of revenues for the City of Clearwater by adding a specific list of parks and trails that may be funded out of the revenues. It does not change the amount of revenues that may be raised to fund their projects. In 2010, the legislature passed a provision tying the projects, the allowed projects, to those enumerated in an adopted 2006 city improvement plan. After the fact, it was discovered that the city never formally adopted the plan. So this just takes all of those projects and lists them separately. Section 10 is the repealer. The first thing it does is repeals the penalty and safe harbor provisions related to the early remittance schedules, which were eliminated in both bills in Section 1. It also repeals the authority for 1% Rochester food and beverage tax.
And you can see, members, that the Senate put most of those issues in their policy technical non-budget bill. Okay, with that, questions from members or the department? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this existing page on Section 8, termination of tax central cities, what are the central cities?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to do them off the top of my head. They are St. Cloud, Waite Park, Sartell, Sauk Rapids.
Sauk Central.
There were five.
I actually have them in my folder, but I'd have to.
I don't remember which ones, but there were five.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the question I had, I brought this up in committee, too. These cities are wishing to extend a tax in their community for the next 20 years. And my question is how far do we extend a tax, and when is it the responsibility of the current citizen to vote in a referendum to approve a tax like this? And when does it go beyond the future citizen's right to establish a tax on themselves? Could we extend a sales tax for 100 years, and would that be responsible to the three or four generations into the future, and say that it's legal? I guess it's a philosophical question.
What do you think?
Mr. Chair, we actually have some local sales taxes that have no end date.
Really?
Wow.
City of Duluth.
Wow. Mm. How'd they pull that one off? You can see an amendment coming.
It's just just things to think about,
Senator
Limmer, Mr.
Very
Chair.
Good point. Very good point. Senator Ortman.
On that provision to Senator Limmer, it expands the tax to the five communities. But the five communities have to pass a referendum in order to adopt it. So it's expanding the existing and then moving forward.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, the question, the reason why I bring it up is, you know, at least a few years ago, people would move every 7 years. And so if you look at a generation of homeownership, once every 7 years, you could vote on being responsible to your community in reaction to a sales tax extension. This goes 20 years, and how far do we go in allowing a local option sales tax to be taxed, and what generation of homeowner or property owner is responsible for that?
Senator Ortman.
Chair, and to Senator Limmer's point, I think these are communities that want in on the local option sales tax, not out. They want to participate.
Yeah.
Senator Limmer. And I'm sure we'll have a robust discussion on that issue as we proceed. Still can't figure out why Ms. Dalton did that. But okay. So with that, any other questions from the department or members? Paul, Senate. Okay, thank you very much. Article 4, if we could please bring up Mr. Sylvia, Mr. Paulson, Mr. Michael, Mr. Hines, I believe. No, Mr. Hines, you don't want to come up? Okay. Okay, you don't have to. Okay, Article 4. Let's start with Section 1. Mr. Michael, please.
Section 1 and Section 2 of the House bill are general law extensions of the provisions that were originally passed by the legislature in the 2010 jobs bill and extended last year. Section 1 expanded authority to create economic development tax increment districts for an additional 18 years. Section 2 extends the surplus increment provisions for 18 years, and the House and the Senate provisions in Article 4 are a little bit odd in that what the House does by general law, the Senate does by special law, and what the House does by special law, the Senate seems to do by general law, so we're a little out of sync here. So for this provision, the Senate has a couple of special law provisions. Later on, for provisions that we have special law provisions, they have a general law provision.
Section 3, Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, what this section does is modify the definition of a redevelopment district. Currently, the language required in a particular area consists of 70% of the area occupied by buildings, streets, utilities, et cetera, and more than 50%. Be structurally substandard, and what this does is change the language so that it requires that 50% or more, not 50%, be structurally substandard.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Section 2, Mr. Michael.
This again is one of the two provisions from the 2010 bill, and it extends that by 18 months. This is the provision that allows a city that has surplus increments to spend them on assisting construction of new buildings. But that isn't what it gets every year. Section 3 of the House bill is a modification of the 2010 legislature that allows an additional use of the additional housing pooling for foreclosures. What the House bill does is that one of the restrictions in this law that passed is a market value restriction on the homes that you can use this authority for. And it was unclear in the law whether that test is to be applied after the construction and rehabilitation has been done or before. What what the House and Senate bills both do is clarify that that test is applied before construction or rehabilitation occurs. The Senate has an additional provision that I'll let.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, the Senate, very similar. There are a few changes. The requirement that the property be six or more months specifies that the property has been closed, the redemption period has expired, and that the authority or developer agrees to acquire the parcel no earlier than 30 days after the expiration of the redemption period closure.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Let's go to Section 4 in the House.
Section 4 is a special law. City of Oakdale. This is a provision that the legislature initially
passed in
2008.
He said we would.
It allows the city an additional 2 years to establish the district under this special law. And secondly, it makes a change because the city is actually torn down one or more of the buildings that are involved. It allows them to treat those torn down buildings as still being parcels that are occupied by a substandard building. This is the blight test that you need to qualify as a redevelopment district.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, the Senate has almost the identical provision. It's just the Senate allows extension for 4 years from 2013 to 2017, whereas the House allows a 2 year extension.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Michael, Section 5.
Section 5 is one of these provisions where the House has a special law provision and the Senate has a general law provision. This relates to the city of Apple Valley. It gives the city authority to have exercised special powers within a large area of 600 acres. It contains sand and gravel pits in it. And what the city is allowed to do is if it goes through and makes findings that parcels that comprise 70% of this area need one of six different tests, that then it can designate that as a qualified project area in which these special rules apply. And those six qualifying rules are that it either has to have feet or require substantial fill, or there was a landfill or a dump. Similar condition of the gravel pit, which is the primary circumstance here, the floodway, or there were substandard buildings. If they are able to make that finding, within that area, districts that qualify as redevelopment districts, even though they don't meet the blight test, and special pooling rules apply that otherwise would not apply. And remember that the pooling rules essentially put a percentage limit on how much of the increment from the district can be used outside the district. Normally, that's a maximum you can do under that is either 5%. Those restrictions would not apply here so long as those increments were all spent within this bigger project area. The final special rule that would apply to the districts in this project area is that the five-year rule, which is a constraint on how quickly, or it's a requirement that you, how quickly you have to enter contracts and complete your spending, is extended from 5 years to 10 years.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, the Senate essentially created a general law provision to make this more statewide. Provisions are almost identical, just a few changes noted on the top of page 21. The threshold for parcel to be treated as wholly meeting a requirement. The House has a 70% threshold. The Senate lowered that to 50%. Also, the Senate removed references to some of these impairments causing difficulty for commercial development. The Senate removed the word commercial so that it would just read a substantial fill required for development. Same concerning the other characteristics.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Michael. Section 6.
Section 6 is a special law provision for the city of Maple Grove that is very similar to the circumstances that apply in Napa Valley. The main difference with this is that it allows essentially a creation of a new type of district called the soils district that essentially is allowed to be used, to have its increments used to essentially do soils corrections, so like grading, filling, and so forth, and 25% of that increment from that district may also be spent on related public improvements. But otherwise, the same rules that we were just talking about that apply to Apple Valley also apply to this Maple Grove district.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, likewise for this section, the Senate also created a mining reclamation project area with many of the same provisions, simply general law provision. Sections 1 and 2 of this article for the Senate modifies the definition of both for an authority and a project, and what that just allows for a municipality that undertakes a project is considered within the definition of authority, and likewise this mining reclamation project area is also within the definition of the project. The only other difference is that the Senate also allows up to 25% of increment in this area to be used for correcting conditions that qualify as redevelopment or renewal and renovation district expenditures, which essentially allow for the correction of the conditions that would justify creating the district.
Okay, Mr. Michael.
Section 7 of House Bill relates to a tax increment district in the city of St. Paul. It authorizes this district is scheduled to be decertified at the end of this year in 2012. And what this section allows is the Dakota County Community Development Agency to certify a new district that essentially has the same capture value and the same geography as the existing district. And it allows a 5-year term for that district, and it exempts it from a number of the restrictions that would apply under general law. In general, it's increments for improvements and equipment and so forth that a normal tax increment district could not use because it's primarily to serve a decorative or aesthetic purpose. They would also not be subject to the pooling rule, so they could spend on outside the district on public infrastructure and so forth. The other feature to this is, unlike a normal tax increment district, the capture value of this district would be included in calculating state formula aid. So, for example, the city of West St. Paul's LGA would include the captured value of this district, which is not normally the case. Similarly, Dakota County's program aid and the school, the West St. Paul schools, school aids all would include the
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate language is exactly the same, exception that it allows for a 5-year extension. The Senate allows for is a total of a 15-year extension through 2027.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Michael, Section 8?
Section 8 is extension for the Central Station TIF district, which allows an extension of this district through essentially that's a 4-year to the current district.
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, likewise, the Senate's language is the same with the exception that the Senate does allow for a 7-year extension through 2013, the House, as Mr. Michael indicated, it's a 4-year extension.
Mr. Michael, Section 9?
Section 9 is another Bloomington tax increment district extension. This is for the District 2. It's an extension of the district through 2020. present law would be certified in 2019, so that's a 10-year extension.
Actually, Mr. Mike, or Mr. Sylvia? That. Section 10.
And members of the Senate plan is the same. We only change the
an extra 10 years. Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Michael, Section 10. Or excuse me, let's go to the Senate, Section 12, Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 12 extends by 1 year the authority of the Brooklyn Park Economic Development Authority to spend increment from an existing TIF district to assist in the development of a hotel and aquatic performance wellness center. And I believe this is similar to Sections 1 and 2 of the House, where it allows increment to be used for jobs that would allow construction in that matter.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Michael, Section 10.
Section 10 of the House bill is a special law provision for Brooklyn Park, and it parallels the second provision of Section 12 of the Brooklyn of the Senate bill, which allows an extension of the five-year rule through July 1st of 2014 for that district. And as Mr. Sylvia mentioned, why the House did not do the first part is because under the jobs bill general extension, they would have authority to spend the interest of the aquatic center under that.
Okay, Mr. Sylvia, Section 9.
Mr. Chair, this section is comparable to Section 1 of the House bill, but it is specific to Apple Valley. The City of Apple Valley to use its tax increment financing from economic development districts to provide improvements, loans, interest rates, subsidies, and other assistance if certain conditions are met, to retain construction jobs, and there are some timelines here. The Senate extends the timeline by Subdivision 2 and extends by 18 months the City's authority to spend tax increment for a construction authority.
Mr. Michael.
I'll let Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 14 relates to a St. Cloud TIF district, and what this allows the St. Cloud Economic Development Authority to spend the balance of increments from a particular TIF district within the Central Area Urban Renewal Project area, which is the area from which the increment originally was. From remaining must be spent by December 31st, 2015, or then it would be distributed as excess increment, the excess increment statute.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Questions from members of the conference committee or the department? Okay, with that, we will go to Article 5.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Michael.
Article 5, Section 1 establishes a new Greater Minnesota internship program that will be administered by the Office of Higher Education. This is a program that's intended to encourage employers in Greater Minnesota to essentially retain create more intern programs, and it provides a 40% grant, 40% of the intern's compensation up to $1,250 for a maximum of 5 interns in a taxable year. The total grant expenditure under the program is limited to $1,250,000. As I said, it's administered by the Office of Higher Education.
Okay, Mr. Mike, Section 2.
Section 2 modifies the reporting of excise tax that's required. Essentially what it does is it prohibits the acquiring distributors to include copies of the sales tax exemption certificates for each will actually require that. The actual substantive provision is the second provision, which comes later on.
Okay, and then we've talked about Section 3, I believe. Okay. Okay, Section 4, if we go to Mr. Michael.
Section 4 is the authority for the city of Virgis in Otter Tail County to impose a gravel tax, so long as the county does not impose
Okay. Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair, this Senate has a similar provision in its policy and technical bill, Senate File 2136. The only difference is that the Senate specifies that the proceeds of the tax for the city of Virgis must be used for the purposes described in Subdivision 7 of that statute, which is the breakdown, as Mr. Michael indicated, of the 85% for roads and bridges and 15%. It simply just ties it back to specifically Subdivision 7 for this statute.
Okay, Section 5, Mr. Michael.
Section 5 allocates an additional $150,000 in border city enterprise zones for the five border cities along the North and South Dakota border, Morehead, Grand Forks, Breckenridge, and Morganville. Those monies are allocated among the cities on a per capita basis, and they can use it for either the regular border city enterprise zone or the city development zone as they wish they can allocate between those two programs.
And the Senate has no comparable provision on that. Item 6, Mr. Michael.
Section 6 extends by 10 years the St. Paul Capital Improvement Bonding Program, which allows the city to issue general obligation bonds outside of their charter.
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Sylvia,
the Senate also has the same provision in its policy and technical bill, Senate File 2136. The difference is the Senate, in addition to extending the authorization to 2024, also extends or increases the maximum principal amount from $20 million to $25 million.
Thank you. Mr. Michael, 7.
Section 7 is a special law provision for Itasca County. 2003 special law that allows Itasca County to issue revenue bonds for its nursing home. These changes would allow the county to fund those revenue bonds with general obligation bonds, which would generally be permitted under general law, but the special law prohibited the county. Issuance of those bonds would be subject to a reverse referendum if 5% of the voters petition for a
Mr. Sylvia?
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate also has the same provision in its policy and technical bill, with the exception that the Senate does not require that the issuance of these bonds be subject to a reverse referendum for Itasca County.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Section 1, the Senate, Mr. Sylvia. Or Ms. Pollack, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Section 1 of the Senate's miscellaneous article contains a provision for general fund savings and budget reserve transfer. It requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to reduce general fund appropriations to executive agencies by the amount of savings provided through implementation of the Data Analytics Master Contract Program. It also requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to cancel the difference between the savings resulting from those reductions and $99.9 million in the budget reserve account to the general fund on November 15th. The city of Sartell
doesn't. Okay, item next, Section 8, Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, this Section 8 of the House bill is a one-time transfer to the general fund of $4.3 million the Department of Revenue has in special revenue account that represents amounts that the department has withheld from local sales taxes to cover the cost of administering those sales taxes.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, the Senate's provision is essentially the same.
Mr. Michael, Section 9?
Section 9 is that liquor reporting, the more substantive of the liquor reporting provisions that I mentioned before. What this, for calendar years 2010 and 2011, so this is just a temporary eliminates the requirement that the distributor has to have the taxpayer identification numbers for each of its retailer customers and provide that to the Department of
Revenue. Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, this provision is contained in the Senate's policy and technical bill.
Mr. Michael, Section 10.
Section 10 contains the purpose statements for the tax expenditures that are in the House bill. There's a purpose statement for the employer credit for hiring veterans that states that it's the intention of employers to hire more veterans and to enable their reintegration into the community. The NOL transfer program has a purpose to create more highly paid, high-quality jobs in the state. Similarly, the Foreign Operating Corporation.
And no comparable provision in the Senate. Mr. Michael, Section 11.
Section 11 establishes a 15-member legislative tax reform commission. And four appointees, Senate majority, Senate. Similarly, four by the House Speaker and two by the House Minority. Legislative appointees are divided half between private citizens and half between members of the legislature. This commission is to report back to the legislature by March 2013 and it's to make recommendations. State and local tax system, so the implications of demographic changes, ways that the tax system can make Minnesota more competitive, for attracting investment, tax system simpler and fairer, and so forth. The side by side says this has a blank appropriation.
$25,000.
Summary of that is not correct. The commission also, one of the unique features of this commission is it's mandated to produce a bill to implement its recommendations, and it's 30 days after it's submitted its report. Section 12 is a Woodbury bonding provision that allows the city of Woodbury to bonds without holding a referendum to expand the sports center. This issuance of bonds would be subject to a reverse referendum, similar to the
idea. Section 13, Mr. Michael. And similar provisions of the policy technical bill in the Senate. Section 13, Mr. Michael.
Section 13 is the actual appropriation for Greater Minnesota Internship Program. And Sections 14 and 15 are special bonding provisions for Steele County and Joaquin County that allow them to issue to Steele County $650,000 of CIP bonds for fairground improvements, and similarly for Joaquin $1 million for fairground improvements. The Steele County also authorizes the facility, but I've been told by the county that they don't want that, so they would like that to be dropped. Section.
And sections 13, 14, 15, no comparable cent provisions. Questions for members on Article 5?
Chair. Chair.
Senator Lemon.
On Section 13, Mr. Chair, there's a reference to 5% of an appropriation that would be going to DEED for academic and internship programs. The summary says 5% of the appropriation may be used for administrative expenses. Is that a maximum of 5%, or is it 5% and then it could be exceeded beyond 5%?
Mr. Michael? Or
Mr. Chairman, if I recall right, I think that's the one I look at that, but I I'm quite sure it's a maximum limit and it cannot be. Of the appropriation is for administrative for the Office of Higher Education. So the summary is wrong in referring to D. This is actually administered by the Office of Higher Education.
All right.
It's all that they could spend for administration. The rest of it has to go for direct grants to the employers.
Right. Senator Limerick. Okay, we'll move on. Now, members, Article 6 is basically the technical fixes to the market value. Basically, it's the market value homestead exclusion cleanup. Is there any member that or feels that they need to go through that? We've gone through that in our committees, the technical fix there. The questions on 6? Okay, what we'll do now, members, is we'll go to the spreadsheet. We'll go through that to see if there's questions on the spreadsheet. And then, members, if you could keep your papers in your folder or for the Senate in your binders, so we have those for our next meeting. And as we're getting situated here, the next meeting will be, well, I'll turn it over to, when we're done with the spreadsheet here, turn it over to Senator Ortman for a description of how she sees this playing out after Easter break. So with that, if we have Ms. Schill, Ms. Templin, and Ms. McQuay. Who would like to start? This is where we get our rulers out.
The Senate always starts.
No. The Senate. Okay. What? Ms. Templin, you want to start, and then you can just keep it moving here.
Mr. Chair and members, the first page of the spreadsheet is just a summary page showing the changes in tax revenues and expenditures for the House, the Senate, and the Governor. Just to summarize, Mr. Chair, would it be okay if we went through the appropriations year by year in the current biennium, and then for the out biennium for fiscal 14 and 15, we just refer to a biennial amount?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the House in fiscal 12, there is a zero revenue change, and in fiscal 13 there is an estimated revenue reduction of $64.7 million in the 12-13 biennium. And I guess I'll move on to the tails for fiscal 14 and 15, the estimated revenue reduction is $377.6 million.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. members,
McQuay?
For the Senate, the general fund revenue changes for the Senate in fiscal year 12 is zero, and for fiscal year 13, there's a reduction of $102.505 million, and that would be the total for the biennium as well. And for the tails, the reduction to the general fund is $192.105 million.
Okay, Ms. Schill.
And Mr. Chair, members, on line 4 of the summary, we're looking at general fund expenditure changes with transfers. The House for fiscal 12 is a reduction in revenues of almost $3 million. In fiscal 13, there is a reduction of $60.9 million for a total biennial amount of negative $65.17 million. For the tails, the impact would be a reduction of $149.3 million.
Mr. Chair and members, the change to the general fund for the expenditures is the $4.3 million as a result of the transfer from the Special Revenue Fund in fiscal year 12 and $98.329 million in 13 for a total of $102.6 million for the biennium. In the tails, the expenditures are totaling $1.595
million. And Ms. Templin?
Moving on to the line 5 for the net changes for the House, there's a positive $386,000 for the bottom line for the fiscal 12 and 13 biennium in general fund changes. And for the tails, there is an estimated revenue reduction of $228.3 million for the 14 and 15 biennium.
And Mr. Chair and members, for the Senate, the general fund is increased by $124,000 in the first biennium and shows a decrease of $193.7 million in the tails.
Thank you. Page 2.
Mr. Chair, page 2 of the spreadsheet, starting on line 13, there is a, for the House, there is a provision that replaces the FOC deduction with a non-refundable tax credit. In fiscal 13, this is estimated to raise $25.4 million to the general fund, and in fiscal 14 and 15 for the biennium, it's estimated to raise $40 million. Moving to line 14, there is a provision to eliminate the dividend received deduction for REITs, real estate investment trusts. The estimated revenue gain in fiscal 13 is $1 million, and the estimated revenue gain for the tails is $2 million. Moving on to line 15, this is a provision to increase the second tier for the R&D tax credit from 2.5% to 4.5%. This is estimated to reduce revenues in fiscal 13 by $25.7 million. And in fiscal 14 and 15, the total estimated revenue reduction is $42.1 million. Line 16 of the spreadsheet is for a provision for technology corporate franchise tax certificate transfer programs. This is referred to the NOL, referred to as in the summary as the NOL transfer. The estimated revenue reduction of this provision in fiscal 13 is $10 million, and for the tails, it's $30 million. In addition, members, I should mention that, as Mr. Michael described in the side-by-side, that the language in the House bill also specifies that in fiscal 16 that there is also $30 million for this transfer program, and in fiscal 17, $60 million, and in fiscal 18, $60 million for this transfer program. Moving on to line 18, this is the angel investment tax credit. The House increases the allocation by $5 million from a total of $12 million to raising it up to $17 million per year. Again, in fiscal 13, the estimated revenue reduction is $5 million and $10 million for the tails.
And Mr. Chair and members, that was a Senator Michelle provision in the Senate, and that increased only from $12 to $14 million for a revenue reduction in fiscal year 13 of $2 million for a biennial total also of $2 million, and then for in the tails, $4
million. Line 20 of the spreadsheet.
Ms. Templin.
This is the jobs tax credit for qualified veterans. In the House language, it goes to 150% of the federal credit. And the estimated revenue reduction in fiscal 13 is $1.95 million. And for the tails, it's $4.3
million. Mr. Chair and members, the Senate carried a provision to conform for the marriage penalty for 2012 only, and that is a revenue reduction of $62.2 million in fiscal year 13, and that's the biennial total as well. In addition, the other federal conformity provision that the Senate carried was the IRA rollover, and that had a cost in the 2013 for a total biennial cost of $1.4 million. And then the tails have a total of $40 million reduction in revenue. Senator Ortman carried the new provision that had the introduced the military pension subtraction, and that level is set at 46%. That begins in tax year 2013. That total for the 14-15 biennium is a reduction of revenue of 21.7. It's partially offset by the repeal of the military pension credit for past service for a total of $2.5 million in the out years. In addition, Senator Bach proposed on the Senate floor to increase the credit for military service in a combat zone to from $120 per month to $240 per month, and that is cost the general fund $3.8 million in the 14-15 biennium. Senator Peterson had a provision to repeal the contractor withholding requirement, and although there's no revenue reduction, it's simply a compliance issue. There is a cost of $105,000 in the first biennium and $215,000 in the next biennium. Senator Senjum extended the historic tax credit sunset, and that does not carry a cost in this or the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, moving to the sales tax section of the spreadsheet, looking to line 34, this is the provision that eliminates the refund requirement for capital equipment for small businesses. The House phases this in fiscal 13, and the estimated revenue reduction is $7.8 million. And for the tails, the estimated revenue reduction is $7.7 million.
Mr. Chair and members, right. The phase-in is similar for the Senate. There is a delay until calendar year 13, and the reduction in revenue in fiscal year 13 then would be only $3.5 million. And the reduction in the 14 and 15 biennium is $10.1 million.
Mr. Chair, looking at line 36 of this spreadsheet, this is the sales tax exemption for an established religious order in a higher education institution. This is St. John's. The estimated revenue reduction in fiscal 13 is $44,000, and in the tails, it's $99,000.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Howe and Limmer carried a medical device exemption clarification, and this exempts medical devices purchased by transactions covered by Medicare and Medicaid. And for fiscal year 2013, the reduction in revenue is $3.9 million, and the reduction in revenue in the next biennium is $9.6
million. Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, the data center qualification modification is effective in fiscal year 2013 and is a revenue reduction of $6.1 million in the next biennium. Mr. Chair and members, it looks like you and Senator Hoffman carried the exempting certain purchases by nursing homes, and that is a total revenue reduction in the first biennium of $10,000, and $20,000 in the next biennium.
Fine piece of legislation. Fine piece.
I like the one before.
I do, too. Or do I? Oh, no, the one before that.
We got to take care of the marks.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Schell.
We're moving to the statewide property tax levy changes in the bill reflected in lines 43 through 56. You can find the House provisions in lines 48 through 50. Basically, for pay 12, we're assigning separate levy bases by freezing both the seasonal rec and the CI at pay levels, pay 12 levels. And then we subtract out the amount excluded up to 70% of CI value under $150,000. This is a reduction of about $55 million. And you recall we also have the 12-year levy phase out beginning in 2014. The state levy decrease for fiscal 2013 is $40.3 million, and in fiscal 14 and 15, we are missing a total there. It's the, it's $309.6 million. There are income tax and corporate tax interactions that are also reflected on line 50. That's a positive $2.2 million in fiscal 14 and a positive $4.6 million in 15.
Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair, the The Senate also carries a similar provision for the phase-out of the state general levy, and the Senate freezes the state general levy for pay 2013 to pay 2016, and then a 10-year phase-out following that. The reduction in revenue in fiscal year 2013 is $29 million, and in the tails, the reduction in revenue is $141.9 million.
Ms. Templin?
Moving to line 59 of the spreadsheet, the minerals section. In the House, there is a provision to for the non-ferrous occupation tax rate reduction from 2.45% to 1.45%, and the net proceeds tax rate increased from 2% to 3%. There is a negligible impact in the tails and no impact in fiscal 12 and 13. Moving on to the other provisions, line 64 of the spreadsheet. This is the increase in the production threshold for small brewers, for the small brewers credit. This has an estimated revenue reduction of $390,000 in fiscal 13 and $790,000 for the tails.
Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair and members, that is the same provision in the Senate, and the numbers are identical.
Ms. Templin or Ms. Schell?
Madam Chair and members, we've moved to page 4 of the spreadsheet where you find the section of property tax refunds. Line 1 on that page is the reduction of the renter's property tax refund from 17% to 15% rent paid. This is also including the split schedules for senior and disabled and non-senior, non-disabled renters. This is for claims on rent paid in 2011, so the impact will be right in fiscal 13. There is a cost savings of $66.7 million in fiscal 13 and 14. And for the 14-15 biennium, it is a cost savings of $153.2 million. Now, you will also notice on line 2, there is a placeholder line for impacts associated with DOR administrative costs for making mid-year recalculations for this. I will tell you this is a placeholder, and I know that this number is incorrect. It will increase. It might even double. We are waiting for a full fiscal note from Department of Revenue, and I had talked with them, and they were putting the finishing touches on it before this meeting, and hopefully we'll get an update as those figures become available. In addition, I might add there will be other DOR costs for two other items apart from this that we're looking for information on, and I have preliminary numbers on that as well.
Ms. Von Marsh, did you want to comment on that at all?
Madam Chair and members, we are working on the fiscal note. I expected it to be finished this afternoon, but we do expect it to be released tomorrow. And Michelle is correct on that. The cost for this item will be higher than reflected on the spreadsheet.
Okay, Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair.
Oh, excuse me, Michelle.
Yes. Continuing on line 3 with the targeting property tax refund, the House version of this change increases the current 60% of tax increase to 90% of the tax increase for a maximum refund of $1,000. The cost impact of that is spending in 2013 only of $4.1 million.
Hey, Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate has a similar provision to modify the formula and increase the percentage to 75%. And the Senate does this beginning in pay 2012 and continues this this increase. The cost in fiscal year 2013 is $1.98 million, and the cost in the next biennium is $1.935 million.
Ms. Schill?
Okay, moving to line 7, where we modify the local government aid payment. Cities with a population of 5,000 or more are frozen at the 2012 amounts. cities under 5,000 population get the greater of 2012 aid or current law 2013 aid. The cost impact of that provision is in fiscal 14 of $1,069,000. There are also property tax refund interactions and income tax refund interactions that take place also in fiscal 14. Each of those are at a value of a cost of $30,000 apiece. Also on line 10, you'll see the modification for the city of Tamarack that takes place in fiscal 13, an additional cost of $12,000, and in fiscal 14, it is blended in with the LGA allocation, so you have a zero on that amount.
Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair and members, the Senate also modifies local government aid, but the Senate freezes the pay 2013 payment at 2012 levels. This results in a savings of $1.2 million over the 14-15 biennium. This also is accompanied by a property tax refund interaction and income tax interaction of $30,000 to the positive each. The Senate also carried a provision. This was a Senator Daley provision to enhance local government reporting. And in calendar year 12, cities and counties are required to submit this additional reporting in order to get the performance measures pay at 14 cents per capita. And and as a result of certain cities not doing that extra submission, there's a savings to the performance measures of $70,000 in fiscal year 13.
Okay, and then is it Ms. Schill in the next portion?
Yes. Madam Chair and members, line 17 through 19, this is for Border City zone allocation. It is mislabeled. The description is correct. The label is not correct. It should say Border City zone allocation. This is the reimbursement for property tax credits issued to qualified CI properties in either enterprise zones or development zones in the five designated border cities. This has a cost impact of $150,000 in fiscal 13. Moving down the page, line 21, this is the reinstatement of the bovine tuberculosis property tax credit. Just so you know, a bovine property, bovine TB management zone is way smaller than the previous program. It consists of only 12 townships. Therefore, the cost to reinstate it is significantly less. You'll see the cost on line 24, $70,000 in fiscal 13 for biennial total of $70,000, and then one more year in fiscal 14, also $70,000. There are also interactions associated with that reinstatement that extend into the tails, a cost savings of $8,000 per year. Moving on to page 5 and line 29, this is the senior deferral elimination of the interest accrual, removing the 3% interest accrual on deferred property taxes. The cost is in the tails, fiscal 14 of $180,000, fiscal 15 $190,000, for a total of $370,000.
Mr. Chair and members, the homestead market value
Ms. McQuay.
Credit cleanup to the market value exclusion cleanup, carries a cost in the tails of $400,000. As a result of property tax refund increases, and an additional $400,000 as a result of an increase to the income tax refunds, because levies are expected to go up for the special taxing districts.
Ms. Schill?
Mr. Chair, on line 39 through line 41, you'll see the provision for property tax exemptions for 2 years for new construction in flood-damaged cities. This is in Moorhead, and the impact, actually, you'll see it as a PTR impact extended in fiscal 15, a cost savings of $15,000. Line 43, you'll see the aggregate materials tax for the city of Vergas, and that does not have any impact at all. Line 47 is the agricultural extension due to flooding. This is for property owners in Marshall County who suffered property damage in the 2009 floods. The impact is in the tails, and it's a negligible impact in each of those years. Line 49, you'll see the delinquent property tax interest rate modification. There are two impacts here. First, line 50, you'll see the Department of Revenue general fund impact is zero. On line 51, you will see the impact to the K-12 aid interactions. I will tell you, we had a fiscal note on this that lasted for days. And I was in conversation with the Department of Education on this particular provision because we had two other bills that also sought to do a similar thing. One had a cost impact of over $400,000 to the K-12 interaction. Right now, in this bill in particular, this provision that was from Representative Rukavina's bill, it changed a couple of times, even once on the floor. And the bottom line is this. We know that because maybe the better way to do it is to read it to you. It's from the fiscal note, but basically there's a $26 million impact statewide if, in fact, penalty monies are not gained by the counties. And that money flows to the school systems. And to be able to better identify the impact of the school systems, you need to know how much is happening in each county. The counties don't collect the information very well, so it's hard to determine what is penalty money and what is interest money. And so the Department of Education just said, basically, we don't know. We know that there will be an impact. I can't give you a dollar figure. We know it would be in the tails because of when those are collected and then when the monies are redistributed. So we probably won't get any better information on that, but we know that there would be a cost. It would be to K-12 aides. And then we go to the appropriation section.
Starting on line 54 of the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair, there we have a set of miscellaneous appropriations and costs. On line 55, there is an appropriation for a tax reform commission study of $25,000, one time only in fiscal 13. And on line 57, there is an appropriation for the Greater Minnesota Internship Grants. And as Mr. Michael clarified, the 5% administrative fee is within the $1.25 million appropriation. This is an appropriation that starts in fiscal 13 that carries forward into the tails for a cost of $2.5 million in the tails. Moving to line 58, this is the special revenue fund transfer. It is a one-time transfer in fiscal 12 of $4.3 million. It's transferred to the general fund. That is a savings in fiscal 12 and 13 only, again, of $4.3 million. Mr. Chair and members.
Ms. McQuay.
The Senate does not carry any appropriations. However, there is an education finance adjustment for different reasons. On the next page, I'll go into the education levy changes, but as a result of two of those changes, there's a $699,000 increase in levies, and the resulting savings to the general fund is $339,000 one time in fiscal year 2013, and that can be found on line 56. The Senate carries the same provision for the special revenue fund to capture $4.3 million in fiscal year 12. And in addition, there is a budget reserve transfer of $99.9 million in fiscal year 13.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, page six is just a set of totals, and I will comment on on line 63. This is the line that you will see on the summary page that reflects all of the changes for tax aids and credits proposals. Briefly, the impact in 12 and 13 is $65.17 million, and it's a cost, and the same. It's a cost in fiscal 14 and 15 of $149.28 million.
And Mr. Chair and members, the total aids and credits cost is $102.629 million in first biennium and $1.595 savings in the next biennium.
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, that concludes the general fund sections of the spreadsheet. Page seven of the spreadsheet shows the non-general fund impact. Do you, Mr. Chair, should we go through line by line the non-general fund section?
Why don't we go down to line 26 on page eight. Go to line 26 on page eight. We can look at sales tax issues. That's we don't need to go through those line by line.
Okay.
So why don't we go down and sum it up at the end of page eight? Let's talk about Ed Finance. As you'll notice, members, the sales tax issues are local and a lot of zeros in there. So Ms. McQuay or who? Ms. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and members, there are three education finance provisions, levies that the tax bill is carrying. The first is to remove the cap on the career and technical levy. This is an increase, a levy increase of $19.13 million in the next biennium. Line 27 and are two provisions that Senator Olson and Senator Nino carried, and these extend levy authority for member districts of the TIES consortium as well as the SCRED consortium. And those levies are subject to the property tax recognition shift, and that totals $701,014 and $701,015. In addition, the Senate is also carrying two provisions to extend lease levy authority for administrative space for districts in the Faribault district and the Wayzata district, and that comes out with a savings of $2,000. So netting out those two provisions that are subject to the property tax recognition shift of $2,000 reduction gets you the $699,000 levy increase that's subject to the PTRS, and that's what's reflected in the aid savings of $339,000 on the previous page that we.
Okay, questions for members or the department? Okay, with that, what we will do is I'd like to thank members for their time tonight for the walkthrough here. I'd like to thank all the staff, the department. Thank you so much for being here and all interested parties. I got scolded here. I'm not supposed to say roadies and groupies, but that's you guys out there. That's an old Wayne Simino. We used to chair the Appropriations Committee. You're too young for him, right? Yeah. Wayne Simino. That was Wayne Simino phrase. So with that, we will be adjourning here and we won't be meeting again as far as a formal conference committee till after the Easter break. And then there'll be the call to Chair Ortman at that point. So watch for those announcements there. So members, staff, department, interested parties, thank you so much. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.